Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's best.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Welcome into another Behind the Bets podcast, a second taping on this Tuesday, November 20th. We have the NFL pod as well taped early, clearly because of the Thanksgiving holiday. So hopefully everyone is downloading these podcasts and we are helping soothe the travel pains during this Thanksgiving week of travel. It is brutal and there will be delays on trains, buses, traffic, obviously flight delays as well. And we're here for you, and we also want to give out some winners. So Phil Steele's coming up with his five plays. He went 3-2 last week, and then John Murray as well from behind the counter has some sharp plays on this rivalry weekend. And some NBA talk as the Warriors have failed to cover four straight. They're struggling. Draymond Green's out tomorrow. And what do we make of all these other teams? This unpredictable first month or so of the NBA season's been wild. The Celtics, of all teams, are barely over 500, so a lot to dive into with him and Tiger Phil and Chuck and Tito, MMA, the third fight of the trilogy. So we'll get into all of that with John Murray straight ahead.
Stop. Hammer time.
There's a couple games I plan to hammer this coming week, and I need to flush it out with our man Phil Steele back on the podcast. Phil, how are you, my man?
You know, I am doing great, Doug. How about yourself today?
How do you feel when I'm telling you I love some games this week?
That's good to hear, especially after last week. You were sort of wishy-washy on the entire week, and I guess it showed on the Sports Center.
It did.
Doug Kazarian actually had a losing week.
The Shock. Russian is cut. It happened. Yeah, I went 1-2, and I'm annoyed. Look, woulda, coulda, shoulda. There's been some coin flips that I've had to whittle my picks down to three for Sports Center, and I've obviously chosen the right ones. I remember Arizona at home against Oregon earlier this year. I did not choose it. I took Houston that day. Ended up being the right decision. So won that coin flip. This time I took Oklahoma first half. Probably was leaning towards Wazoo based on our conversation on this very podcast. So I went 1-2. I'm a bum. I'm bummed about it. It happens. 23-10 now on SportsCenter. Still obviously a very fortunate record. But it would have been nice to just continue that. I got to finish strong. Two more weeks to go. I'd like to go at least 2-1 each of the next 2 weeks.
You think they'll bring you back on this week?
Maybe not after my NFL picks. I've gone 1-2 back-to-back weeks. Yeah, well, it's the NFL. I'm just glad to get one win sometimes. So, Bud, you went 3-2 last week. It was an ugly week. It was tough. I really should have gone with the Citadel as well. Fantastic handicap on your end, calling out the triple option. Calling out all those points, 50-plus. Hard not to want to take that. But then again, Bama had covered 10 straight first half, so finally that streak comes to an end. But that's okay.
Yeah, and it's a great – and you rode that streak almost the entire year, and when you ride a streak, you can win many times. You lose only once. So you got the most out of that one, Doug.
I did. I was happy with it. I did jump off a couple times. You were not a fan of that. You almost you scolded me, basically.
I did.
So I left.
Yeah, I think there was twice I did that.
Yeah, if I had played the other three times, it would have been 2-1. So you're right in that regard. But, you know, I wasn't wrong necessarily in the Mississippi State game. And it was, you know, it was the right sort of angle. It was there, but they just got lucky with the refs. But here we are. Much more enjoyable matchups this weekend on the college football card. And I know you have five plays, and I want to get to those. Should we start there? Should we start with which one would you like to go? Let's go with your picks.
We'll start with my five.
Okay.
And then we'll definitely cover every other game that you want to cover.
All right, so let's go there. First things first, do you have any of the Thursday games? Or any action during the midweek?
No, I do not.
Okay. So you're on Saturday, and you want to start with Virginia, which honestly should have won last weekend. I was disappointed they didn't. That was a heartbreaking game at the end. They covered, but they had the game outright. And you like the Wahoos on the road in Blacksburg.
Yeah, and Virginia Tech has just absolutely dominated this series. I mean, it's been, 14 years since Virginia's actually beat them? Been a long time. And the Cavaliers this year just come in with a much better defense. You watched the defense last week, Doug, against Georgia Tech. I mean, Virginia had a 403-305 yard edge. They shut down the option. A couple of big plays for GT, a couple of key turnovers for Virginia, and they ended up losing that game, but still a good season. And I really like Bryce Perkins this year. He's got a 19-9 ratio throwing the football. He's run for 726 yards. So they have a balanced attack with Perkins and Ellis running it, with Perkins throwing it. And how about Zacchaeus at the receiver spot? He had made some big-time grabs. So really impressed with Virginia overall. And with Virginia Tech, you know, as I mentioned last week going with Miami against them, this Virginia Tech defense at the start of the year was extremely young and inexperienced. They lost their key players. They keep losing players to injury, and the defense just keeps giving up the yards on a weekly basis. So a massive defensive edge here to Virginia, which is a lot fresher, a lot healthier, and have got a lot better bodies. And I like the offensive edge as well. And the spread's actually fairly cheap here. It's 3.5. Maybe that's based a little bit on the fact that Virginia Tech has dominated this series throughout the years. But let's face it, Virginia Tech's home field edge hasn't been quite the same. This is a Friday game. It's at 3:30 in the afternoon. So I don't think Virginia's going to be intimidated. And the one thing they want to do is to end this streak now. And I think Virginia's got the better team and gets it done. So I like the Cavaliers, -3.5 on the road.
What if I told you at the beginning of the season you'd be doing that?
Not Virginia. I had some other teams. Like, I would have favored at the start of the year. I did have, after talking to Coach Bud Foster in the spring and seeing how young his defense was, I thought that I would take Notre Dame at Virginia Tech. I like Boston College at Virginia Tech. I like Miami of Florida at Virginia Tech. But I cannot tell you at the start of the year I like Virginia. In fact, I had Virginia picked at the bottom of the division in the magazine, so I did not call for that.
Interesting line and game and pick here. You're going with Texas A&M, short home favorite to LSU here.
Yeah, and this is a Texas A&M team that's just so much better than its record indicates. Yeah. And, you know, you go back to that Auburn game, and remember the Auburn game? I had A&M in that one, and I said the way we lost that game after dominating it with a 28-13 first down edge, we're going to pick up on wins on Texas A&M for the next 2 to 3 weeks. And they covered against Ole Miss. They beat UAB last week. And I think it continues here. When you look at these two teams, you know, LSU's known for their defense this year, and they've got some big-time names and some big-time players. But surprisingly, Doug, they're holding their opponents to 88 yards per game below their season average, which is good. It's number 17 in the country. But did you know Texas A&M's holding their opponents to 94 yards per game below their season average, number 13 in the country? And when you look at these two teams offensively, there's really no comparison. Travion Williams, 1,326-yard rusher, averages 6.1 yards per carry. Kellen Mond, a quarterback, is hitting 59% with a 17-8 ratio, also a dangerous runner. They're outgaining their foes by 88 yards above what they had coming in. They've played a brutal schedule. They could easily have a much better record. I thought they played better than the score showed against Mississippi State, dominated Auburn but lost, and their other two losses are to Clemson and Alabama. And now they're at home for this with what I feel is the stronger team, even though Texas A&M somehow is not ranked and LSU's in the top 10. I think Texas A&M is a stronger team at home, and you're laying less than a field goal in that situation. So I'm going to go with the underrated Texas A&M minus the points, -2.5 at home in this one.
I can't fault you there. I'm fading. I'm down on LSU. I just don't think they're that strong. We talked about it with the Alabama game. I agree. Texas A&M is one of the most underrated teams, and so is Mississippi State, and that's who I love in the Egg Bowl, and we'll talk about that later. But I agree the Aggies are extremely underrated. Another team you're backing here, that it's going to take some convincing for me, is TCU. Now, they got the W over Baylor last week, but I think they had failed to cover 7 straight, and you like them catching a few points here, and what you would imagine is a letdown spot for Okie State.
Yeah, and also they've got a third-string quarterback now because Michael Collins got injured last week, so they're all the way down to Grayson Mulstein. They call him the Mule, and he's a guy who, when I talk to Coach Patterson, I go through every player on the team with every coach. Mulstein was a fourth-string quarterback, but he said this guy really knows the offense. So, and here's – you probably – you might not be old enough to remember this, Doug, but back in 2015, All right, that was just a couple years ago. They went into the bowl game against Oregon, and they were down to the third-string quarterback. His name was Brian Kohlhausen. He hadn't even started a game before. They took on the Oregon Ducks. He hit 30 of 47 for 347. So that tells me that Gary Patterson can take a quarterback, especially one like Muhlstein, who knows the offense, and get the production out of him. Now, you talk about a team that has probably got its tank emptied. Look at Oklahoma State, fired up for Texas at home. Pull the upset 38-35. The next week they go on the road. They're in a back-forth game. They end up losing by four at Baylor. They come going to Oklahoma, lose a one-point game where they got stopped on the two-point conversion. Then they're down against West Virginia, rally for the win at the end of the game, and now they've clinched a bowl. They just got their sixth win, and they've got to travel on the road to TCU. How much more can you have left in the tank after that? And meanwhile, TCU, they were pretty much dead in the water. They got blown out by West Virginia. They're a 4-6 team. They'd have to win their last two games to get to a bowl. They're done. They're cooked. They go into Baylor last week, come out with a win, despite losing their quarterback, as mentioned, in Michael Collins. To me, the biggest edge for them in this game is their defense. TCU is actually holding opponents to 82 yards per game below their season average. That's number 22 in the country. Oklahoma State actually allows their opponents 30 yards per game above their season average. That's number 99 in the country. Now, no doubt Oklahoma State's got better offensive weapons, but we've seen them be pretty average at times this year. Remember, they had 12 points against Kansas State, 17 points against Texas Tech. And I think in this situation with TCU playing to make it to a bowl with the better defense at home and playing for in the first start for a quarterback where we've seen Patterson do pretty well with that, and they're getting points, I like TCU plus the 5 points here at home against Oklahoma State.
It's a strong sell by you, Phil. Strong.
Appreciate that,
Doug. Do your research. I mean, those stars really do seem aligned. Like, I think it's a really good spot there for TCU plus the 5. This team has just let me down so often throughout the course of the season.
Yeah, but at least, you know, if you're playing on streaks and you were playing against TCU every week, that streak at least ended last week.
I wish. We'll get to the my personal favorite nickname for a rivalry game in a second. But first, you like Memphis laying a touchdown here. And I'm not with you on this one. I'm not against you, but you're going to have to convince me of this one because Houston's pretty solid, although the Ed Oliver antics make you wonder.
Yeah, and not only Ed Oliver, but at the end of their last game against Tulane, De'Arik King, who I'm amazed at this guy watching him play this year. De'Arik King has got 676 yards rushing. He's thrown for 36 touchdown passes and had just 6 interceptions all year. And every time I've watched him play, he's an amazing quarterback, amazing athlete, and has made that Houston offense almost unstoppable. Well, unfortunately, he got injured in the game against Tulane, so he's out for the year. So your quarterback is Clayton Tune. Clayton Tune has hit 20 of 42 passes, completing 47% of his passes this year, and he's nowhere near the runner that De'Arik King is. So I think offensively, they lost by far their star player, and I don't think they're going to be as potent offensively as they had been all season long. Defensively, it wasn't just Ed Oliver. They were actually missing all three of their defensive linemen last week to injury. Even if Oliver returns, do you really think he's going to play the whole game? He's got NFL on his mind. You know that. I know that. I got the feeling there will be an injury in the second quarter where he comes off the field and doesn't really play a lot of plays. Plus, you got the wonder about a little bit in the locker room. Meanwhile, with Memphis, you know, once again, here's a team that they played Missouri, and they lost their star running back, Darrell Henderson, the first series. They got blown out, so they were going nowhere. But now, all of a sudden, they've won their last three games. They still have an outside shot at winning the division and getting to the CUSA title game. They've got Brady White. They've got one of the most explosive running backs in the country in Darrell Henderson. And this Houston defense has been given up 89 yards above what their opponents come in allowing. Now, Memphis is averaging 523. So if you add 89 onto that, they should give up about 600 yards here. The last five games, they've given up 344, 204, 312, 212 rushing. And I think Henderson has a big game running the ball. I think Brady White does a good game throwing it. They're tough at home. Almost beat UCF at home. Other than that, they pretty much have blown out all their opponents. Remember last year they beat UCLA at home. So I think you got a Houston team limping in here without their quarterback and without a good portion of the defensive front seven, taking on a Memphis team, hitting their strides. It's had, well, let's face it, they've been given a second life after opening up the year 4-4. They're off three impressive wins. I like the Tigers to get this one at home by more than a touchdown.
You were up to the challenge. Well done. Well done. You took the challenge and then ran with it. So nicely done there.
I would agree with you on rivalry names here, yeah, but you go right on ahead.
This is my favorite, the Holy War. Look, there's some odder names and probably a little bit more clever, although this one just captures it. BYU and Utah.
Yeah, and this is a legitimate rivalry. People around the country probably don't realize it, but I do a lot of shows in Utah every year, and I tell you what, these teams hate each other. Holy War is very appropriately named for it, and it's been a great rivalry. In fact, you go back over the last 22 games, times these two teams have played, Doug, amazingly, 17 times the game has been decided by 7 points or less, including the last five. So generally, it lives up to that rivalry billing. And, you know, I could tell you, since it's rivalry weekend, let me give a quick thought about that. And everybody says, you know, rivalry underdogs. I say it's absolutely true. I can't tell you how many times that I'm scratching my head at the end of a game during rivalry weekend, and I say, how can I possibly explain that to myself? And my only possible answer is, it's a rivalry game. And I remember my dad giving me an example. I think it was back in 1970-something. Kansas State was playing Kansas. And I said, I like the favorite. And he said, you know what? You got to watch those rivalry games. And my numbers on the sheet I had, because I did all kinds of, this is a teenager, I've got all these computer numbers, and not computer numbers back then, they were more handwritten numbers, but they had the one team winning by 24, and he's like, well, be careful. And I learned my lesson that day, and it's been true so often throughout the years that the rivalry dog has been just a surprise. Now, here's a BYU team that plays a lot better as a dog. Let's look at a couple of their underdog games this year. They open up at Arizona. They pulled the upset. They go into Wisconsin, pulled the upset. They did get beat by Washington, but then they went into Boise State and only lost by five. So they played well as a dog. They've got a very good defense, holding opponents to 86 yards per game, below their season average, number 18 in the country. Offensively, they're not quite the same as Utah, but let's face it, Utah lost their quarterback, Tyler Huntley. They lost their running back, Zach Moss. Shine has looked good. Shelley has looked good in their place, but they're a little down there. So I think Utah still has one of the best defenses as well. Two very good defenses, two offenses that are struggling a little bit. And then you factor in Utah has got the Pac-12 title game on deck. If they win that, they're the Pac-12 champs. They go to the Rose Bowl, and it's a tremendous season for Utah. So BYU's got no such look ahead. They've got their bowl game wrapped up, but it's a rivalry game. They want to end their losing streak to Utah. Most of the games are close. And the line is surprisingly up near two touchdowns. It's 13.5 for this.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take another close game in the Holy War and take BYU plus the 13.5.
Good stuff there, man. Look, it's all tickets cash the same, right? So if you got to take some ugly games and some ugly dogs, that's what you got to do. But these games aren't too bad. I mean, Texas A&M, LSU, obviously an intriguing game. Some relatively good teams there. In Memphis,
I didn't pull. I didn't pull a single CUSA or Sunbelt game.
Yeah,
right,
you're
this
fine.
Week, Doug.
You know, you're fine there. This is not UNC Charlotte, Florida Atlantic, anything like that. So I'm torn.
Let's talk about some of Doug's games now.
All right. So the two I love the most are comparable spreads. Let's start with the Egg Bowl.
You just throw that word around, by the way, Doug.
Which one?
Love.
Love. Yeah. When it comes to point spreads, no. So look, it's on the road. These are the case for Mississippi, right? It's in Oxford. They're not going bowling. So this rivalry game is their season. Like that's what they care about. But Mississippi State lost last year.
The Egg Bowl is their official bowl game.
Yeah. Mississippi State lost last year. So a little revenge here. They are the much better team. And they are one of the most underrated teams in the country. I think they get this win by double digits. They're only laying 10.5.
And I would have to echo your sentiments there. When you look at Ole Miss this year, you know, offensively they do well.
Yeah, they're okay.
For the most part. Yeah, they've had some struggles. Like when they played LSU, they only had 16 points, 328 yards. When they played Alabama, 7 points, 248 yards. And I am going to put Mississippi State's defense in the same category as Alabama and LSU.
Wow.
For sure. I mean, on the season, Mississippi State holding opponents to 138 yards below their season average, number 4 in the country. They've got one of the best defensive lines in the entire country, and so they're an elite defense. Offensively, last year in a game in the Egg Bowl, remember Nick Fitzgerald got injured early, and then Mississippi pulled the big upset there. This year, Fitzgerald's healthy. They're playing better offensively down the stretch. 478 yards against Arkansas last week, 532 against Louisiana Tech. So I like the way they're playing. It is indeed a legitimate revenge game for Mississippi State. And I don't think the home crowd is going to be too intimidating. It's not like you're playing at Mississippi State with all the cowbells. So, you know, add it all up, I agree. You've got the better team playing with a much better team, playing with legitimate revenge. And Ole Miss has just now lost four in a row, could be five, should be five in a row after this one. And Mississippi State's in great current form.
I agree to all of that, Phil. Just, I guess my only apprehension is how badly they played at LSU. I mean, I understand the Bama 24-0 in Tuscaloosa, but losing 19-3 at LSU when I think they're a better team, that does concern me here.
Yeah, and I want you to note that in that LSU game, by the way, with I think it was under a minute left in the first half, LSU had a grand total of 15 yards offense. So that's pretty good there. But the one other thing I wanted to point out is while Mississippi State is number 22 in the AP poll, each week on ESPN.com, I have got up the Vegas power ratings. And Mississippi State in the Vegas power ratings are number 11 in the country. So this is a team that's much better than what the AP and everybody has, and they're gaining a lot of respect on a weekly basis.
I know, but they also lost at Kentucky. So it's just like three losses now, albeit to Bama, LSU, and Kentucky. But still, like, this is an inferior opponent. It just, that's my one concern for putting the mortgage on it. That's all.
And those three teams they lost to had one common thread, including Florida as well. And that is a very good defense. Something we cannot say about Ole Miss, which is giving up. They're giving their opponents 57 yards per game above their season average.
My other game that I really, really, really like, and I'll classify it.
Stop. Hammer time.
Exact same spread. Notre Dame minus 10.5 at USC. The Irish have one game to take care of business, and they're going to the playoff. USC, I mean, who knows what's going on right there. Clay Helton's on his way out. They lost to their rival. Now, this is another rival, but this is a team spiraling, and I like the Irish. I think they're just a better team as well. I'm not too concerned with it being on the road at the Coliseum. I think the Irish just deliver a beatdown on an SC team that's been faltering all year.
And I'm once again in agreement with you on this one, Doug. And in fact, last week I sort of I leaned with USC over UCLA, thought they had to play the good game, and then just had the ball run down their throat, shockingly. 313 yards rushing, 6.0 yards per carry, and that just sets it up for Dexter Williams. I mean, this guy, remember, missed the first four games for Notre Dame. Since he's come back, he's been an electric running back. They've got Ian Book back now as well. He missed the Florida State game, but looked good last week against Syracuse, hitting 23 of 38 for 292 yards. And the Irish, in my mind, are a complete team. They've got a good special teams. They can run the football. They're averaging 4.6 yards per carry. They throw the football well. They're hitting 66%. And they've got dynamic defense, holding opponents to 90 yards below their season average. They only allow 53% completions. They only allow 3.7 yards per carry. We saw them matched up against a Pac-12 team earlier this year in Stanford, and they just pretty much steamrolled Stanford, a 550 to 229-yard edge. And they've had games like that where they get rolling. Now, it's a rivalry game, so they'll have Notre Dame's full attention for this. And just frankly, with USC, they're a team that's underachieved. In fact, you know, I do another podcast here on ESPN, and Matt Schick threw out last week as an example. I had five plays on that one, went 4-1. My one loss was USC, and Matt Schick pointed out.
What are you giving out? Why are you doing better on their pod and not ours?
That's a great question, Doug. It's a little frustrating that because. I prefer to go 5-0 with my buddy Doug, so sorry about that. But he threw out, he goes, that's the third time you've used USC, Phil. And I'm like, well, they're going to do it this time. No, they're not. They're done. They're cooked. They lost to me three times in the last 4 weeks. And I'm done using USC. They're giving out a lot of yards per carry on defense as of late. In fact, they allowed 200 yards rushing to Utah, 283 to Arizona State. And offensively, while they've got weapons, I mean, Seth Ware is dangerous. Michael Pittman and St. Brown at receiver, a couple of very dangerous guys. And JT Daniels is a guy who I think 3 years from now is going to be contending for the Heisman. But this year, 13 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, taking out a very good defense. So I think overall you've got a much better team, playing with a lot better. And as you mentioned, you don't know what's going on in the USC locker room right now. The rumors are swirling, you know, who's going to be the next head coach, what's going to happen, is Coach Helton going to be let go? So I don't think the crowd's going to be that much. I mean, the USC-UCLA game, I think, had the lowest attendance since 1956. And granted, that was UCLA, but that just goes to show you the apathy that's going on right now out there. And I like Notre Dame to go out there and crush them. So I agree with you there.
At no point in the game will I feel comfortable with USC unless they're winning. Like, that's the thing. Like, even if it's like a 3-point lead for the Irish, I'm like, this, the beatdown's coming. USC has not strung together four solid quarters in one game. I thought the Stanford game was like their best game.
Yeah.
They play tough, they on the road. You know, all that stuff. They play tough.
Right. And if not for minus three in turnovers, I mean, they had a shot at that game. They had a 20-13 first down ratio.
Interesting. All right. What about some other rivalry? Let's go to the Iron Bowl, Auburn-Alabama. The number seems about right, 24. Auburn doesn't look as incompetent on offense as it has earlier this year. And 24 is a tough one to lay in that. I mean, I wouldn't take the dog, but I don't know if I'm going to lay the 24.
But I would lean with it. And, you know, if you're queasy in the fact that, you know, this is the Iron Bowl, and how do you conceivably go with a large favorite of this size in the Iron Bowl, I will point out that the last time Alabama was this big of a favorite, they were a 34.5-point favorite. And it wasn't that long ago. It was 2012. 34.5-point favorite. They won the game 49-0, and Auburn's a team that's just, in my mind, they've been a fake team all year. And the key with Auburn, they have to be able to run the football. Now, last week I liked them against Liberty, and I liked them against Ole Miss 3 weeks ago, because in each game I thought they could run the football, and that's when Malzahn's offense is at its best, is when they're running the football. And they ran for 340 yards, got the shutout. But Alabama's defense is outstanding. On the year in SEC action, giving up 2.7 yards per carry, 82 yards per game on the ground. Auburn's not going to be able to run the football. Alabama will get pressure on the quarterback. And on the flip side of the coin, after a couple of off games, you know, where they had 29, 24 points, I think Alabama's offense gets it rolling. So the fact that they're playing with legitimate revenge, remember they lost at Auburn last year, I would lay the 24.5 there. I agree. It won't be one of my top plays, but I like the Tide in that one.
What about Louisville, Kentucky, or shall I say Louisville, Kentucky?
How do you play on either one of these teams? Kentucky disappointed me last week, Doug. I liked them against Middle Tennessee. They jumped out to a 17-0 lead. I'm like, here we go. Here we go. This was too easy. And, yeah, it was. Stockstill, the quarterback, threw for 293 yards. He had 30 of 33 passes for Middle Tennessee, and Middle only lost that game. The final was 34-23, only lost by 11. So Kentucky came up 4.5 points short of covering that game. I'm a little disappointed. Kentucky also lost to Tennessee, Georgia, so they're on a three-game losing streak against the spread. But Louisville is a team that, you know, they fired their coach. They've had moments. Now, here's the amazing thing about this team. They're getting blown out on a weekly basis, right? But they're only being outgained by 116 yards per game. It's not like they're 200 yards to 490 or 500, and yet each week the scoreboard is showing a drastic blowout. It's a rivalry game. If I'm Kentucky and I got a chance to step on Louisville, then I'm going to do it this week, so I would lean with the favorite. But Kentucky disappointed me too much last week for me to back them this week as a favorite.
Yeah, I like Kentucky here, too, just because they've been such the little brother for so often that this is their chance to really hammer it home. And this affects
recruiting,
too.
Given the opportunity, wouldn't you step on their throat?
Yeah, no, I think they do. But it's a lot of points, and Louisville's not completely incompetent, although they have showed signs of that lately, so hard to make that statement with any certainty. And so you can't quote me on that one, Kai. And what about this game that had all the makings of a really intriguing game until West Virginia lost, but Mountaineers at home against OU, the Sooners' defense has just been atrocious. I mean, the first team ever, right, to win three straight while giving up 40 points in each of those wins, and now they're on the road laying 1.5 here in Morgantown.
Yeah, and this one, you know, the winner of this game is in the Big 12 title game, and the loser's out.
Yeah.
So Oklahoma, if they lose this game, they're not even in the Big 12 title game unless – Kansas upsets Texas.
Nope.
Just telling you, Doug, that's not going to happen.
Nope.
It's going to be Texas against the winner of this game in the Big 12 title game. Now, West Virginia's got an explosive offense. I mean, Will Grier and company putting up some big-time numbers this year. They've got the receiving core. They've even got a nice balanced offense. They can run with McCoy. They can run with Petway. So even Brown's got some good yards this year. But Oklahoma's got the best offense in the country. They may have the best offensive line in the country. Trey Sermon's running the ball well. Marquise Brown, C.D. Lamb are explosive receivers. And Kyler Murray, you know, all off-season, Doug, when I talked about Oklahoma during my radio show circuit there, I would say, well, we know that Kyler Murray's not going to match Baker Mayfield's 70%, 43-6 ratio from last year, but he will be a dynamic runner. Well, he's proven that. He's been a dynamic runner, 739 yards, but he's matched him statistically. We're talking 70% completions with a 34-6 ratio. No wonder Oklahoma outgains its opponents by 194 yards per game, which is the best of any team in the country this year. So I'm going to give the edge offensively to Oklahoma. Defensively, now we've seen Oklahoma's defense. West Virginia's is not that bad. In fact, they're holding opponents to 16 yards below their season average, which is middle of the road and better than Oklahoma. So defensively, I'm going to give the edge to West Virginia. Now, home edge, yeah, it's legitimate. It's Morgantown, so they'd have a legitimate home edge. Oklahoma did win the last one big, but I think there were three key turnovers in the first quarter, which really turned that into a blowout, and the Sooners won. So, be honest with you, Doug, I was going to say, you know, whoever has the better special teams, I'm going to go with here. Then I go check my special teams rating. They're right dead even there. So, I mean, this is just one of those games where I can make a case for West Virginia. I can make a case for Oklahoma. I'm going to call this one a popcorn game, Doug, and that is one I'd have no opinion of the side on, but one that I'm going to get some popcorn out and watch it because
yeah.
My computer is actually calling for this to be 48-44, and the total's only 83.5, huh?
Oh, is that all?
I think back to yesterday's game, the Kansas City Rams game, and you're thinking, wow, how do you go over 65 in an NFL game? And guess what? Over 100 points. So I use that with my philosophy for the 83.5.
So we saved the game for the last here, and this is Michigan-Ohio State. And about 3 days ago, I was just like, God, I love Michigan in this game. Now I'm like, I don't know. You know, Ohio State, I'm torn here because Michigan, I think the line's right. Michigan's -4 at the Horseshoe, and I think they're a better football team. I think they get the W. But the Buckeyes, I'm having some reservations, but I think ultimately I'm going to take Michigan. Where do you stand on things?
I am leaning with Michigan as well. Urban Meyer has actually never been a home dog here in Columbus, so that's a nice advantage to have. And surprisingly, my computer actually is calling for this to be a 2 or 3 point game, you know, a very close game, and it's saying that Ohio State's going to gain their yards. And, you know, the one thing I was looking back on Ohio State a little bit on is every week Ohio State gets maligned. Oh, they didn't play very well. But you know, let's look at a couple of the games. I mean, Indiana, they beat 49-26, and everybody's like, oh, that wasn't a good game. In Minnesota, they beat 30-14. Oh, that wasn't a good game. Michigan State, they beat by 20. Not a good game. Now, they've had some close calls. Nebraska, Maryland, they got the blowout loss to Purdue. But they do have an explosive offense. In fact, this year they're averaging 149 yards per game above what their opponents allow, which is number 4 in the country. So I'm going to give them that. Now, the rest of my case is all towards Michigan here. First of all, I like teams that have balance. Ohio State's run the ball a little bit recently against weak run defenses of Nebraska and Maryland. But they only had 2.7 yards per carry against Michigan State. They've basically struggled to run the ball all year. They're not going to run the ball in Don Brown's defense. I mean, Michigan's defense allowing just 3.3 yards per carry, and it seems like it should be even less than that. The 80-yard run against Rutgers hurt them, a couple of big runs. But for the most part, they will shut down Ohio State's run game, which puts it on Haskins. And I'm going to take the more balanced attack with Caron Higdon, 1,000 yards rushing, 5.3 yards per carry. So I lean with Michigan offensively. Defensively, it's not even close. Ohio State's been giving up big plays all year long. I mean, they're giving up. It's not your typical Ohio State defense. In Big Ten play, 4.7 yards per carry they're giving up on the ground. So Higdon should have a good game here. And on the flip side of the coin, Michigan's got the best defense in the country. Yeah, they looked past Indiana last week, gave up 380 through 5 yards, but they still are holding opponents to 179 yards per game, below their season average. Best mark in the country. Ohio State's even below average in this category. They're giving their opponents 9 yards above their season average, number 77. Give you an example. Last year's Ohio State team was number 10 in that category, holding the opponents to basically 100 yards per game below their season average. So it's an atypical Ohio State defense. And the last time Michigan traveled here, remember that thing went to overtime, and Michigan would swear they stopped JT Barrett on a fourth down run. And then on the next play, Ohio State got the win. But they could easily have beaten a much better Ohio State team 2 years ago here in the Shoe than this year. And this is a much better Michigan team as well. So add it all up, I like Michigan, and I'm willing to lay the 4 until Ohio State actually shows up and is that Ohio State team you thought they were at the start of the year. I got to go with the Michigan team that has been as good as I thought they would be this year.
All right, fair enough. I'm with you there. I just got to kind of process everything before I do my 3 plays on SportsCenter, but I'm definitely doing the Egg Bowl on Thursday and may even go on SportsCenter to discuss Mississippi State laying the 10.5, which is what it is right now. But your 5 plays for the podcast: Virginia minus 3.5, Texas A&M minus 2.5, TCU plus 5, Memphis minus 7, and BYU in the Holy War plus 13.5. Phil, always appreciate the insight and perspective and analysis. Thank you very much, especially for tweaking your schedule to accommodate our taping schedule. And you have a happy Thanksgiving, my man.
Well, the same to you, Doug, and best of luck on your plays this weekend. Let's bounce back with a big 3-0 on SportsCenter,
yeah,
my
let's
friend.
Let's do it. Let's do it. All right, bud, you take care, and we'll get you back here next week.
Sounds great, Doug. Have a good one.
Thanks to Phil Steele. John Murray of the Superbook at the Westgate in Las Vegas will join us now, but first, a word from one of our sponsors.
He started as a ticket writer.
Well, the handle has gotten a lot higher here in the last hour.
Now he's a race and sportsbook director.
I have the guys at work here calling me Mr. Director and not looking directly into my eyes.
With people.
Brought in a whole new staff this year. It's kind of a Seinfeld-esque move where we just rotate the guys so the material doesn't get stale, Doug.
What happened in between? A hot tub and ESPN.
A lot of good stuff to get through on this podcast, is we're going to talk a little NBA and MMA. I have an MMA question for you, as we're going to turn back the clocks with Tito Ortiz and Chuck Liddell.
We've got a lot of money on that fight.
Oh, and we got Tiger Phil as well. So we got golf, a lot of legends in their respective sports facing off.
We got some good stuff. This is a busy weekend in the sports world, man. There's a lot going on.
No doubt. So let's talk about the big college football games first. How do we do with the sharp action? I know you got the Ohio Bobcats a week ago, minus the 2. How do we do the rest of the way?
Well, North Texas was a push. If you got North Texas at minus 3, I think some of the dogs that I mentioned did very well. UMass covered, Kansas covered. It was a pretty good day, or pretty good week, I should say, for the sharp college football bettors. They've had a good year. You know, our sharper college football groups have had success pretty much all the way through the season.
Yeah, you gave out the winners. I like that Maction, midweek Maction. You know how I feel about that. Any midweek Maction we got going on this week?
No, I don't have any wise guy plays in college football until Friday morning, actually. Nothing tonight or on Thanksgiving Day.
All right, so no Egg Bowl, because I like Mississippi State a lot.
You like Mississippi State? No, I got nothing on that game so far, but it's still pretty early in the week. Something could pop up.
Okay.
Still, you know, we've only had a couple of our groups bet so far this week. Still, it's still pretty early, but I do have a handful of stuff I can give out.
All right, let's fire away on Friday then.
Friday, I like this one. Iowa minus 8.5. They're at home against Nebraska. Nebraska coming off of a good win over Michigan State, and I think Scott Frost deserves a lot of credit for the rally that Nebraska's had the second half of their season. That's a program that's clearly heading in the right direction right now. But this group laid the 8.5 points on Iowa, and right now Iowa's up to a 10-point favorite here at the Superbook.
Yeah, this Hawkeyes team, we've talked about it in the past on this podcast, and mostly with Phil Steele, just their offense is so much better than it has been in years past. Quarterback play is strong. They did struggle in the wind, although Nebraska, look, I was on them. It was my lone win last week. But the Huskers, it was awful conditions. Martinez was very hesitant to throw. If the conditions are more conducive to passing, we could see a shootout here. And I see 53 is the total potentially here.
Yeah, that Nebraska-Michigan State game, just to go back to that real quick, that was one of the biggest winners of the week for us here. We had A lot of money on Michigan State.
Really?
We had a big bet on the over in that game, and we had a big bet on the second half over in that game. So we were very happy when Nebraska made that field goal to go up 9-6. The only thing that could have really snapped us is if that game had gone to overtime. I think the game total still would have been out of reach, but the second half total could have theoretically been in play if they'd had a couple of overtime sessions.
So Iowa minus 8.5, with that number's now up to 10. What else?
Yeah, this one pains me. West Virginia, coming off of a heartbreaking loss on Saturday. That loss was so bad to Oklahoma State. And our best college group played Oklahoma as a pick'em. Right now, Oklahoma's up to a 1.5-point favorite here, but these guys played Oklahoma pick. That game is Friday night in Morgantown. West Virginia can still get to the Big 12 championship game with a win on Friday.
Right, but with two losses, they're aspirations for the CFP dashed.
No.
But again, still plenty to play for, but you wonder how much they can have left in the tank here after last week's game. OU hopefully was going through the motions last week. I say that for the sake of Sooners fans. Just you're going to need a better performance than you had last week at home against Kansas.
You know, for West Virginia football, when I was a student there, they were in the Big East, and now they're in the Big 12. And for that program to get to a Big 12 title game at Cowboys Stadium, I think it would be against Texas most likely. That would be a big deal for that football program. It'd be a much bigger deal for them than it would be for Oklahoma. Oklahoma, no big deal to go to the Big 12 championship game.
Well, and it'd also be a big deal if Will Grier gets an invite to New York. And that's on the table here.
I said it immediately on Saturday, I wanted them to just get off the field and let Oklahoma State score the touchdown so that Will Grier could get the football back with plenty of time. Mike Gundy played that situation perfectly, and the Mountaineers ended up running out of time on the ensuing drive.
What else you got?
Saturday, I can give you a couple more. Rice plus 10. They're at home against Old Dominion. And Louisiana Monroe minus 3. They're at home, big rivalry game against Louisiana Lafayette. And that line's now up to minus 3.5.
What was that second team?
I'm sorry?
What was the second team after Rice?
Louisiana Monroe, minus 3. They're at home against Louisiana Lafayette. That number's up to 3.5. And what I was going to say is we haven't seen a whole lot of action yet from sharper players on the really high-profile games like Michigan-Ohio State.
Yeah, where do things stand behind the counter there? I know you said you haven't had sharp action. What are you guys going to try to position yourselves for a need on any game?
Yeah, most of the money's on Michigan right now. I think that's going to be what we'll see through the weekend until Saturday. But I think this number's about right. You know, we reopened this game, the game of the year, about 3 weeks ago, and we made it Michigan minus 3.5. Right now it's at Michigan minus 4. Ohio State was very lucky to win on Saturday. We all saw that. I mean, they went for 2, and they went for the win, and the kid was wide open. Looked like the quarterback just panicked and missed the throw. It's clearly the right call by Maryland. Just didn't work out for him.
Now, that's a correct usage of going for the win.
Yeah, it was a correct usage, and it was a great play call too.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy was wide open. I feel bad for the quarterback. He probably makes that throw at least 9 times out of 10. He probably just got so excited when he saw how open the guy was. He panicked and he missed the throw. Ohio State was very lucky to survive that game.
Huh? Yeah, I talked to one of my bosses a couple of weeks ago. We were just chatting football, whatever, and I casually mentioned that. Michigan's going to be favored in that game, or is favored in the look-ahead line. He goes, oh, they won't go off that way. And I was like, oh, I think they will. I think the way the season unfolds, but it was in passing. But, yeah, no, it is surprising to see. I think it's, what is it, 51 straight games that Ohio State has been favored. I think that was the longest active streak.
Oh, wow.
Because they did go off favored, by 1 against Whiskey when Cardale Jones, the third stringer, had to start. Remember that in the Senate, Big Ten title?
Yeah, I remember that. That was the year that I bet Ohio State to win it all that year. That was one of the all-time lucky future bets of my life was Ohio State. I had them at 45-1 or something crazy. Because they lost early in the year to Virginia Tech. And then they snuck back into the playoff. They got in over TCU, which was a pretty controversial decision.
And Baylor, for that matter.
Yeah, and then they beat Alabama and they beat Oregon in the first college football playoff championship game.
I do remember that. And Oregon was, I thought, yeah. Was Oregon? I guess Oregon was
Oregon,
not.
But
Oregon was like a touchdown favorite. Oh, they were. They were like a touchdown favorite.
That was the last time Urban Meyer was not favored, I guess. Does that make
sense?
Yeah.
They had Marcus Mariota. They had they were a dog in the semifinal too to Alabama.
Right. So that was the last time.
In both those games.
That was the last time. So crazy. I had the over in that game. And that was the fun part. I was at a party and there were girls there. It was the national semifinal day and the game.
That sounds like a promising party.
Yeah, the game took forever. And then all the girls were stunned that there was a second game that night. They're like, wait, there's another game?
You guys are still watching football, you idiots? Yeah. That's great. Okay. I don't like them playing these games on New Year's Eve. It's got to be really tough on the East Coast, even on the West Coast, that the second game goes until about almost 8:30, 9 o'clock out here. So it's got to be close to midnight on the East Coast.
By the way, that championship game against Oregon was, in fact, the last time. 2015 championship game was the last time. So it's 51 straight games. The longest active streak right now will come to an end at the Horseshoe, at home, mind you, which is kind of crazy with Urban
Meyer. Against their bitter rivals. Yeah. You know, Michigan really should have won this game 2 years ago when they were at the Horseshoe. I thought it was very questionable call by the official.
It was questionable, but you can't say it was wrong.
Okay.
I had him in a teaser. Leave me alone.
Okay, I thought that was a terrible call. But you know my bias towards Coach Harbaugh. That's well documented in my media up here. I love Jim Harbaugh, so I was biased there, but I thought that was a very poor call.
What do you think the first half line is going to be for Bama Auburn?
Oh, geez. We haven't had to have that conversation this week with Alabama finally not covering a first half. I would think it'd probably be, 14.5 in that game?
Yeah, I think you're going to have to put the hook out there.
You know what was funny about the Alabama the Citadel game on Saturday? No one really bet the first half. We only had it up for a brief period. But at halftime, everybody came in and took the 28.5 on the second half line.
How could you not? I thought that was the strong play.
That was a very, very, very common bet. We saw a lot of money come in on that.
Missed field goal. They almost took the lead. The Bulldogs almost had the lead in the second half in Tuscaloosa.
So if you played football for the Citadel this season, you're got to be praying that Alabama wins out and wins the national championship. You'll be telling your grandkids about how you were tied at halftime against them.
Of course, I think you have to.
For sure,
but
they got to be big Crimson Tide fans.
I expect Bama to roll them first half. I think Saban's going to push all the buttons. They're going to be ready to rock.
I can't disagree with that. And then we got the big Georgia game next week. But you know, there's a lot of really good games this week. We paid for it last week, man. Last week was brutal. Did you guys catch that Air Force Wyoming game?
Oh, dear Lord.
Touch on that.
Yeah, I mean, SVP did it on Bad Beats last night. is probably the worst one of the year.
You're talking about the all-time. I had no involvement in that game whatsoever. I saw the replay. It was like 27-14, touchdown, interception, touchdown, interception. And then the other team scored a touchdown, but there was a penalty. They declined the penalty because they wanted to let them score. And which was actually the right move,
right, because
they were down by one. But I don't think I've ever seen that, a long touchdown with a penalty that they declined and said, no, we want you to have the touchdown. Oh, my God. That's one of the worst beats. I know I've said before, like, I try to be a tough guy and act like I'm never shocked by any bad beats in football anymore, but that one was horrendous. If you had that side, Air Force plus 2.5, I think, was the line.
That was hysterical. It's the right football decision. Let them score.
Yeah, it is. But why didn't they just let them score on first or second down? That's what that.
Because they don't think of these things. They don't think of these things.
That was very confusing to me. But in the end, they let them score, which was the correct thing to do. It was their only chance to win the game was to go down by 8.
Well, they don't think of these things, and in due time, they will. Look, the best comparison I think I can make was the big shift with fouling. Up 3. And, you know, it's look, maybe you make a bucket to go up 3. You have to have quick thinking about it. But in due time, there will be a shift where you see that more often, and then you'll see more players pull a Todd Gurley.
Yeah. No, Todd Gurley did the right thing, and they did the right thing, too. Or I should say Air Force did the right thing, but, man.
I like the refs just looking at them, but they're like, but it was a touchdown. They're like, I know, we're declining it.
Yeah,
and then they'd walk over and talk to him. Like, that was the best part. How caught off guard the referees were, and for good reason. Like, that it was a unique move by the coach.
Yeah. You know, when you do this for a long time, you feel like you've seen everything, and that's why it's hard to, like, really be, like, shook by a bad beat. But I'd never seen that before. There's something new. You see something new every year.
All right, man. Any other games we want to talk about? I like Notre Dame USC. I like the Irish big here. Am I crazy?
Yeah, Notre Dame, very impressive win on Saturday. I know a lot of it, Eric Dungy got hurt early in that game for Syracuse, but Syracuse is a very well-coached team. I'm a huge, huge fan of Dino Babers. There was a lot of money on both sides of that Notre Dame-Syracuse game. We had some big money come in on the over, so we actually did very well in that game here at the Superbook. Haven't seen much yet on this game, but I definitely think the money will come in on Notre Dame. And, I said this on another show. I think the best thing these two programs can do is have a gentleman's agreement. Notre Dame wins. They go to the college football playoff. USC loses. They get a real coach to take over that Trojans program. I think that's the best case scenario for both Notre Dame and USC football programs.
I, as a USC fan, would concur.
I mean, that's the best thing they can do is USC just get dusted and let go of Clay Helton and open up that coaching search. That looks like it's going to be the best coaching job in the country this offseason, unless something happens with Ohio State and Urban Meyer. I think USC will be the most desirable job on the open market.
You don't think your guy Jim Harbaugh is on the hot seat anymore?
I think the Michigan will keep coach around. You know, that, it was a funny thing. Everybody knew going into 2017 that Michigan was really young, and everything was pointing towards 2018. And then everybody acted shocked when they had that bad year. It never really made any sense to me, and I said that in the preseason this year. And this was the year that they were pointing to, and obviously they've had a very successful year. They do need to get one more win, though, or else it's going to be considered a disappointment in Ann Arbor, I think.
Any other potential rollover spots, I think?
We saw some money come in on Missouri. They're a big favorite at home against Arkansas.
I was just about to suggest that.
That's a spot that makes sense. Scoop laid Missouri minus 21. You're seeing this number more like in the 23 range right now. And we saw some money come in on Stanford. Stanford, they're at UCLA. They moved up from 5.5 to 6.5. UCLA coming off of the USC game the previous week. Stanford was supposed to play Cal last week, but that game got moved. So that makes sense as well.
Okay. All right, Bud, let's talk some other sports in just a moment. But first, a word from one of our sponsors. These days, you can get practically everything on demand, like our podcast. Listen whenever you want, when it's convenient for you. Did you know you can even get postage on demand? All you need is Stamps.com. With Stamps.com, you can access all the services of the post office right from your desk. Buy and print real U.S. postage for any letter or any package. All available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Just click, print, mail, and you're done. Stamps.com will even send you a digital scale. You can weigh your letters and packages and print the exact amount of postage every time. Right now, use BETS, B-E-T-S, for this special offer. 4-week trial includes postage and a digital scale. Don't wait. Go to Stamps.com before you do anything else. Click on the radio microphone at the top of the homepage and type in BETS. That's Stamps.com. Enter BETS. All right, back with John Murray here on the Behind the Bets podcast. Murray, let's rip through some golf, MMA, but first NBA. It's an upside-down standings. I can't figure this league out. The Celtics are inconsistent. The Warriors are struggling. The Bucks are good, but they stubbed their toe. The Kings are above 500. What is going on in the NBA, and how has it been for you guys behind the counter?
I think the most confusing team is Boston. Boston, right now, they're 9-8, and that's just it's shocking to me. When you look at the depth of that roster, Brad Stevens, I think we all agree, is an excellent coach. They've got Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward back healthy this year. They're a very difficult team to explain. Golden State, it makes more sense. I mean, they started losing a couple of games after Steph Curry got hurt, so you can at least explain that one. I don't know what's going on with the Celtics right now.
It's a good point because they have such cohesion, and they brought back so many big pieces. Now they had to weave in Kyrie and Gordon Hayward, but I mean, we all have faith Brad Stevens will figure it out. But it is that I would agree with you there. That's the biggest surprise. And
they've played a hard schedule to date. That should be noted. They've played a hard schedule, but it's still surprising for them to only be one game over 500. through 17 games is very surprising.
A contender for that title would be the Jazz being 8-9, one game under 500.
Yeah, and I think the Spurs as well. The Spurs were a team that we saw a lot of sharp guys betting them under, but the public was all over them over, just thinking that Greg Popovich would figure out a way to win games there. But they already look like a team to me that's running out of gas, and it's very early in the season. I think they're really going to be up against it to make the playoffs in the Western Conference. I have to think that Houston will find their way into the top eight. The Lakers are another team, too. The Lakers are going to be right on that bubble of getting into the postseason in the West.
Yeah, I like how they've sort of hit their stride. LeBron looks he's in shape now. I'm happy with them. I'm happy as a Laker.
LeBron, you know, one of the guys that works here, a top odds maker here, he's referred to LeBron as Pop-Pop and calling him an old man. I watched some of the game on Sunday against the Heat. LeBron looked pretty good in that game. I don't know if LeBron is capable of aging. I don't think he ages the way the rest of them.
Yeah, I don't believe cyborgs do. So.
But, you know, Ed Sammons, you know, he said he thinks LeBron has more miles on his tires than any player in the history of the sport of basketball, and that eventually he has to run out of gas. But there seems to be no end in sight there. But I still think that the Lakers are – it's going to be close for them making the playoffs.
They may make a move. You do not have a yes-no prop on the Warriors to the NBA title like you did last year, right?
You know, we opted not to do it this year. Just didn't feel like doing that again. We did it the previous 2 years, but we still think the Warriors will eventually, once they get everybody healthy and they get into the playoffs, the regular season is like the preseason for the Warriors. So I wouldn't overreact too much to this small losing streak.
Well, you're in the futures market. You have the Warriors minus 200. I would take the field there. I really would. If I had to. I don't think there's value, but
I just don't know who can beat them. I mean, the top contenders in the East, I think Philadelphia is going to eventually probably pass Toronto and Milwaukee with the addition of Jimmy Butler. And I think Boston will pull themselves together. But I just can't really picture those teams beating Golden State in a seven-game series if everybody's healthy.
Well, a week ago, I said on the pod that I really liked the Rockets. That line steamed up to close at 4.
Yeah,
I think
it was
pick 'em opening line. They won by 21. I think there's some, you know, you don't have to be Columbo here to figure out there's some issues going on right now. And Steve Kerr's explaining it and sharing that, conceding it. And no Draymond Green tomorrow. And the Rockets, the Warriors are minus 1 at home against the Oklahoma City Thunder. I don't see how the Thunder don't win that game.
Yeah, and the Rockets.
Draymond Green is out for tomorrow. So no Draymond, no Steph Curry.
You hit on the Rockets. I like them too. Just now that they've finally gotten rid of Carmelo Anthony, that was a disastrous decision that they made in the offseason. But they had the ability to see that they were wrong and to correct that wrong. I respect when people do that.
Yeah, it's like your Twitter. You like that on Twitter.
I respect when people see that they're wrong about something and they recognize it and they correct it instead of just digging their heels in and going even deeper. They were wrong and they see that and they've done the right thing now.
Yeah, no need to die on the hill of Carmelo at this age, right?
No.
No need.
Absolutely not. And I think the Rockets, you're going to see the Rockets play a lot better here going forward.
So, I mean, the Rockets have been on a roll. They've covered 4 straight. And including that win, the blowout win over the Warriors. So the Warriors have failed to cover 5 straight. So 5 straight losses against the number, and I think it continues. I wish I kept riding it. I was all about the Houston game, but I wish I kept riding it as they've lost outright in Dallas as a short favorite and then as a small dog to San Antonio, lost by a dozen as only a 3-point underdog. So here they're laying 1. I like the Thunder plus 1. Not that the Oak City's firing on all cylinders, but I think that's a strong play there. So much more of the NBA coming up later as we get through the next holidays. Obviously, Christmas Day is a big slate there. So we'll talk more NBA and see what happens with the Warriors or if any other team makes a move. We saw Sixers, as you mentioned, got Butler. Lakers could add a piece. Lots to be decided moving forward the rest of the way in the association. But it is nice to see Cleveland's back to being horrific. And it just reminds you how amazing LeBron was for that franchise.
It's remarkable if you consider that he had them in a position where they should have won game 1 of the NBA Finals last season in Golden State. And look at this team now without him. They're the worst team in the NBA.
2-13. 2-13. All right, so a couple of things. We're up against the clock. Let's talk about the big showdown in Vegas, the duel in the desert, if you will. Pay-per-view on Friday at Shadow Creek. Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods, where do you have Tiger favored right now? What's the handle looking like?
Tiger's a minus $2 favorite here. Phil plus 170. The handle right now, I talked to Jeff Sherman about it earlier this week. He said right now we've written about 1/100th of what we wrote on Mayweather-McGregor last summer. and even with that, most of that money is, you know, Jeff pays very close attention to the golf market. So he was moving this price as these guys were playing in other tournaments during the golf regular season. And so most of the handle is just guys who were scalping our price to other books that weren't paying as close attention as Jeff. So he said that maybe 25 to 30% of that handle, that minimal handle, is people actually just gambling on this event.
Which is to be expected, right?
I thought so, but you know, some of your colleagues at ESPN were telling us they thought this thing was going to have million-dollar bets and handle rivaling Mayweather-McGregor. I'm not going to name names because I'm big fans of those guys, but we tried to tell them. You know, the biggest thing is the spot in the calendar.
Right. I was going to say people aren't in Vegas on the weekend.
Mayweather-McGregor was in August when there was nothing else going on. This Tiger-Phil thing is on pay-per-view on a Friday, right in the middle of college football, NFL, NBA, college basketball. There is way too much going on, and it's just not going to do big business. Let's say that.
What has more handle, Tiger-Phil or Tito Chuck?
Right now, Tiger Phil, but by the time we get to Saturday, it might be Tito Chuck. We've had guys coming in here asking to make really large bets on that fight. Shocking to me. I told the guys here I don't really want to get into a big position on that fight. I think it's kind of hard to project. You know, Chuck Liddell hasn't won a fight since December of 2007. He hasn't fought since June of 2010. He's going to be 49 years old next month. So you have to think logically that Tito Ortiz is going to win. But Tito Ortiz is an old man, too. He's well past his prime. I wouldn't put it past Chuck Liddell to just flash a knockout and take him out in the first round. But the handle has been shocking for that fight. We've seen a lot of money come in both ways already.
I'll tell you what position you need to be in. You should want Tito. Chuck Liddell is not going to win that fight. I'm sorry.
It's just hard to imagine that Chuck Liddell at his age could possibly beat Tito Ortiz.
I've talked to enough
Ortiz
people.
Ortiz is an old man, too.
I've talked to enough people. Tito beat Chael Sonnen last year, I think.
Yeah, he beat him in January of 2017.
Chael Sonnen in a belt.
So Tito Ortiz has been actively fighting in Bellator up 2 years ago, but that's a lot more active than Chuck Liddell. Chuck Liddell's last fight was June of 2010. He got knocked out by Rich Franklin, and that was his last fight in the UFC.
Have you seen the workout video of Chuck?
Yeah, I saw it.
He's not playing possum there.
Yeah, it's. you're probably right. I mean, you got to think we have Tito right now minus 275. Tito should win the fight, but I'm not going to say that you should rush out to lay almost 300 on something in an event like this.
I was cage side for both of the first two ones. And I won a lot of money on Chuck, the second one. I know what it's like to have that right just fist clenched and dangling, waiting to unload. But that was like 15 years ago.
It was not like 15 years ago. It was 15 years ago.
Well, I think it was after 2005. I think it was like 2008-ish. So maybe it was a decade ago.
No, Liddell's last fight I looked this up yesterday. It was December of 07. I mean, this guy. I'm sorry, his last win.
Okay. Was it Tito?
December of 07. I don't think so. I think it was somebody else. I think it was Wanderlei Silva, if I recall correctly.
I'm looking it up, but I
do it. Check my
both
math.
Guys
check
are old.
Math.
You're right. All right. So the nice thing about Wikipedia is that it keeps Chuck. It's Wanderlei Silva, unanimous decision. And I don't have the date here. Oh, yeah, December 2007. You're right. So the last time he beat Tito was 2006, so almost 12 years ago. I was there.
That's a pretty long time. That was right after I moved out here, or shortly after I moved out here.
And then he lost five of the next six fights.
I was just a ticket writer back the last time Chuck Liddell won a fight.
And now you're a director.
That's changed.
Mr. Director.
That has changed. Yeah, man.
All right, bud. Well, that wraps it up for us. Great stuff as always. Yeah. Busy time.
I got to do one very quick shout out. I cried about my alma mater, West Virginia.
Yep.
But I got to shout out my high school, Gonzaga College High School in Washington, D.C. They beat the Matha in the WCAC championship game on Sunday night on a Hail Mary touchdown pass. Sophomore quarterback Caleb Williams to wide receiver John Marshall to beat the DeMatha Stags. Number one play on SportsCenter. ESPN already shouted it out. I got to shout it out, too. The Gonzaga Purple Eagles. Huge win. WCAC champs.
What was the line in the game?
I think I hear Jay calling me to my next meeting. I got to run, boys.
You have it on the money line.
All right, my man. Well, yes, props to you. Brown was not as successful in the Northern Championships with a spot to go to the final, to go to the NCAA tournament. So it happens. But I'm glad your alma mater did produce on the field of play.
My high school alma mater did. Let's see if the college one can get it done on Friday against the Sooners.
Sounds good, bud. Hey, safe travels. Happy Thanksgiving. Appreciate all your efforts this week to get this done.
All right, boys. Have a good Thanksgiving.
You too, Murray. Thanks.
Thanks to John Murray at the Westgate and, of course, Phil Steele with his five plays and Murray chipping in with his plays from behind the counter. Kai, any confessions of a non-gambler?
Doug, I do not have any confessions of a non-gambler, but I do have a little question for you, maybe a little wager that we can do.
Okay.
Are you betting on Chuck Liddell?
You trying to beat up on me because I'm just stumbling all over the place in the bonanza?
No. Not, this isn't football related.
Okay.
But I get the feeling you're betting on Chuck Liddell.
Yes. No, Tito.
Oh, you're betting on Tito?
Yes.
Okay, never mind.
Tito is the play.
Okay. Because I was going to say, if Chuck Liddell loses, can we get you to rock the Chuck Liddell mohawk?
it should be if Chuck wins, I should have to do that. No, I will not. I will not roll the dice in that way just because I have a career on
well, that's
television.
True. You know, just a little TV gig,
but,
right?
Yeah, again, if he were fighting like a current stud, then yeah, I would. These are two old guys, but I think, look, the number's high, but I would still lay it. I have laid it. It's every guy I talk to in the space feels it's a very, very good play. So Tito is the bet there on that one. So, Kai, you're headed to New Jersey tomorrow?
I am, yes.
All right, man. Well, safe travels to you. I'll be around all weekend.
Thanks, man.
Doing some TV hits and some radio hits, but you have safe travels. Appreciate all your efforts here as well. And thanks to all of our listeners. Hopefully we've provided some entertainment in your travels with the podcast. We aim to please, and hopefully we can also line your pockets with some dough. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone, and we'll see you back here next week.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.